That's
good.
The least amount of fuss for setup.
Crazy.
Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we tried to record last week's episode.
Eight times, four times, and tried.
And it, my computer, my PowerBook G4 just choked.
Yeah.
I was using Audacity, and I was going to record my end of the call through Skype, and you were...
What? Well, we were just communicating through Skype. We were going to record each of our own
right,
on
and
our
then
own
we and later I email the track to you and splice it in, so it doesn't sound like a Skype call. But Audacity would just choke at random points and stop recording, and that's not really what you're looking for when you're wanting to record something.
No,
that's the opposite, in fact, of what the behavior you're looking for.
So hence us being together here until we figure it out. I think I got a game plan for next week. I'll try and set that
up. Also, I had some errands I could run in this area, so just drove up here, make it a little easier.
Did you hear about the big Skype crash?
I did, only because, what was that? Was it on the media? No.
Oh, there's been a couple of places. It's weird. Nobody's really, they're explaining
Marketplace. It was on Marketplace.
Oh, my God. I mean, you forget that Skype, I totally forgot that Skype was bought by eBay and that and then Skype is becoming this real force. In fact, I'm about to buy this thing for my work. We have a PBX system at work, but you can buy this brick that you puts into your PBX that will basically make all outgoing calls if you want Skype calls. It's going to save us like $2,000 next year, and it's totally built with Skype in mind, and it's like, holy geez, Skype has become this real force, and basically all of Skype was shut down for 12 to 24 hours. I don't even know if it's up and running right now for the most part.
Yeah, I actually, at a few jobs ago, or my last job, one of my meetings with the big boss, I said, you know, there's this program out there called Skype, and I don't know how much we spend on long distance calling, but you know, the investment per computer is making sure they have a sound card and a mic and speakers, and you know, it's like $15 a computer, so think about it. And of course, I doubt anything ever happened.
Well, we went ahead. One of the challenges there, if I found at my job, is that having two different technologies. So in other words, like at my work right now, I went and bought like four phones, and we have a Vonage phone, and I want everybody to use Vonage to do outgoing calls. It'll save us hundreds and hundreds of dollars every month. At where we are, every call is long distance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would think that would be easy, but it isn't. Myself, I sit there and always pick up my regular phone rather than that Vonage phone. I mean, I'm as bad as anybody else. So the one beauty of this new technology is it connects right into your phone. So you just don't know it.
I tell you what, though, my job now, we had to move locations, and the new location has a VoIP system, which is voice over internet protocol, which
like
is
Vonage.
Basically Skype or Vonage or something like that. And the sound quality is...
Really?
And I don't know if it's the phones where you... I think they're Linksys phones, and we have a conference call every day, and I have to be on speakerphone, and... one of the other guys on the team is like, I think it's just that when you're on speaker, it sounds bad. And you're like, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That should make no difference. And I was like, and they come back the next day. Okay, the big boss at our location has done something to improve the quality of the IP. And I'm like, is there like an analog dial in the back somewhere? Like bad, good, better. Yeah. And he's rotating it a couple of notches. Anyway,
I've only had a VoIP phone here at my house for 3 years. I think it's great. At the very beginning, I had issues with it, but now it's
you know what though? It's you know, Vonage is in trouble because they're in a lawsuit with Verizon, and the only reason they're operating right now is they got a stay from a judge. So you kind of wonder how long is that going to last. Plus, I had a buddy who was on SunRocket, which is a competitor.
Yep.
And like he would buy a year at a time. I forget how much it costs, and he gets an email one Saturday night or whatever it was, and we're basically saying, well, we're done, bye. And you're like, what? So, you know, if you're not, and he's an incredibly technologically savvy person, so he can set up a backup immediately and make adjustments. But you got to think there are other people that they just,
The thing that I worry about is that they list this lawsuit to Verizon, and Verizon is just evil and awful, and they have their own VoIP now. That's basically what they're doing, and Comcast. And they're charging a ridiculous amount, and they're charging it because they know their customers are not savvy customers. Their customers are going, well, I just want to go with the people I know, but they're charging way too much. My Vonage is $15 a month, and it's bulletproof. So yeah, I just worry that if I lose out, I'll have to go with somebody else.
You know, for whatever reason, I just don't hate Verizon, which is my telco. I hate Comcast with the passion of many, many suns,
yeah,
the fiery passion. But Verizon, I don't. I mean, I get it. I understand. And yet, once they offer fiber, I'm so there.
Yeah.
I will plug in and whatever they want. Oh, yes, fiber.
Well, the thing is with them is that they're charging $40 for the same thing I get for $15 from Vonage. That's what kills me. That yeah, said, with I, the Skype
for,
now,
for me, I like having a copper backup. So if the power goes out, yeah, I can actually plug a regular old style phone in it and use it.
Yeah.
Right now, that's valuable to me. Although apparently, when they do new fiber installations, part of the thing you sign when you do it is gives them the right to remove the copper.
Jesus, for
from,
money
from your house to the line or whatever.
Wow.
I guess because copper is very valuable as a commodity right now, and they will make it up by,
damn,
you know, you'd think that would be very labor intensive to remove the copper lines to your house, but it also, of course, ties you to their fiber.
Yeah.
And they don't, their new fiber networks, they do not have the same bandwidth sharing agreements for that they do with copper.
Yeah.
So you cannot do, you know, a Vonage service over the Verizon fiber.
Well, no,
system.
The Vonage is a pure, it's just pure
well,
web-based.
Or I guess not so much that. What's the other one I'm thinking of?
Like a DSL.
Yeah,
like
the one company that did that?
Speakeasy and others.
No,
like
it
that.
Wasn't Speakeasy. It was something else. I don't know. They kind of like
Covad,
that was it. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And I was just, and I always, I like the thought of going with the smaller guy,
yeah,
but when the smaller guy is completely and utterly dependent on the monopoly's services.
Well, what's especially scary is that, especially with the net neutrality and stuff, is that they can, if they wanted to, Comcast, who I get my internet through, can throttle back, and they know what packets are going out, and they can say, oh, this person has a Vonage system, and they can screw that service up.
Oh yeah,
and so their service works good, and they have no appreciable benefit other than they want to charge more money.
Well, I heard there was something going on in was it Buffalo, upstate New York? I heard something on one of the podcasts I listened to about a bunch of people suddenly reported like WoW players had just insane amounts of lag all of a sudden. And they were theorizing that whatever ISP was up there was suddenly packet shaping them right to the bottom of the queue.
Absolutely.
And it's, ugh.
And then people were, they think net neutrality is not something they should worry about. Did you see that new website, these people that are promoting net neutrality? And it's the all stars of the web and how they'd be hurt. So what they did is, it's very well put together, and they took like three of these nobodies that became very famous because of the net. And the point is that you would have never heard about them if it hadn't have been for this. And they did a music video, and they have interviews, and it's the Peter Pan guy from 7 years ago. Remember the weird guy that dressed like Peter Pan?
No.
It's the Tron guy, the guy that decided to.
Okay, that guy, I've actually seen that picture.
Well, the Peter Pan guy is this like 6'4" guy that dances around like Peter Pan because he loves Peter Pan, and he put this website on. People just couldn't believe he was real. He was totally real. Tron guy, and then there's this weird gal who likes to buy retro sweaters and try them on and put pictures on the internet. So they did this music video with them singing, and it's very well done in a hip way, like an Apple website might be done, of them singing and talking about why net neutrality is such a critical thing for everybody to be thinking about. Stunningly clever, very well put together, and whoever was the money behind getting them together to film it was like stunned. It was unbelievable. Anyway, it was really good. I'm surprised more people haven't seen it because it's one of those things when you see, you just want to click and send to a friend kind of thing.
So anyway, we should perhaps steer away from telephone policy and back to movies and entertainment, which is really the thrust of our show.
Absolutely.
Movies, DVD, TV, video games, and then the tech, and maybe not so much telephone tech, but there we are. So actually, since I don't think a whole lot happened last week, we can redo bits of last week's show.
We did, although hopefully. I did go see Superbad.
Okay, so we'll talk about that.
Yep.
So just to quickly run through some of the movies, Bourne Ultimatum came out. We've both seen it.
Great
both
movie.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
You know, we've talked about Bourne Ultimatum four times now. So
I know, we're getting kind of sick of
it. We're like rehashing the same point.
But it is a great movie. I noticed it's just about, in another couple of days, it will be the all-time Bourne champion for making money, because the second one made 170 and this is about to make 170.
That is so well deserved. It's absolutely such a well done movie, and Paul Greengrass, the director, is he's brilliant.
Yeah, he's a stud.
And he was talking about on the treatment with Elvis Mitchell, and he was talking about how do you do, because it's the third movie in a franchise, the second one he's done, how do you make it not feel like a bloated huge budget action movie that they all tend to feel like? And he said, well, the trick is you treat it like it's a small budget movie.
Yeah.
And you take yourself out of a studio situation where you're actually shooting in a studio, and you go shoot somewhere else where you're forced to use small crews, where you're forced to be uncomfortable because it's an uncontrolled setting. And so they did that. They went to Waterloo Station in England. They went to Morocco.
That was the best scene for me, the Waterloo Station, just the whole way it played out, and I had a real sense of where I was. Some people were saying you had no sense of where he was. I'm going, no, the way he shot it,
yeah,
I felt really connected to that whole scene. I mean, it just seemed really tense but unique, and not, I didn't feel lost at all.
And to me, the thing about that was the big benefit was the location work was outstanding.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, they're in Morocco. They're not shooting in a soundstage. I'm sure they did some shooting in a soundstage, but you know, they're not shooting in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as Seattleites, we of course are especially sensitive to Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly. Or New York, Toronto. One thing I noticed about it too is there were some recognizable stars, and they were basically in there all for extended cameos, and I wasn't sure what to make of it. Like, for instance, early on, and I'm not totally sure why they even added in there other than just to connect to the first movies, but there's this German kid who plays the brother of Bourne's girlfriend that was killed.
Yeah.
And he's a big German actor. I've seen him in tons of
stuff.
Really? Oh, yeah. He was in Goodbye Lenin. He was in The Educators, the Bader Meinhof kind of movie. And he's as big of a German actor as you're ever going to see. Young stud actor. And it's like, wow, here he is. And then it's like, oh, I guess we won't be seeing him anymore. And then what's his name from that great In America movie, Patty Constantine, was the guy in Waterloo Station that was the reporter.
Oh, okay.
And all of a sudden, he's out of the movie. And it was like a series of people like that. There was a lot of big stars. And sometimes I wonder, you know, how much you get paid for that, because it's basically a cameo, and what the mechanics are of agreeing to go into that. Because in a movie like this, to some extent, it almost, to me, is better if you don't recognize these faces.
Well,
these
I didn't
people.
Recognize them at all. So.
Okay.
And the other thing I really enjoyed about the movie, which I'm sure you're sick of hearing by now, is the efficiency of the character.
Yeah.
I just love the fact, and Doug Liman started it out in the first movie and pointed out in the commentary how the guy is just all about efficiency and not wasting time saying, oh man, that guy's dead, now what? But saying, that guy's dead, looks at his watch, I probably have this much time before the cops show up.
Yeah.
I need to immediately, like, it's like a decision tree. It's like, okay, options A through, you know, D are now closed to me. I need to move on to option E right now.
It's like a feral animal that's
and it's
fight
not,
or flight.
But it's not just like in terms of fighting. It's in terms of his entire approach to, you know, his situation and how he's moving through this portion of his life, which feels to me so in tune with his character. And Matt Damon does a great job of it. And I love that.
Yeah.
It's really weird for me to try and articulate why. But it just feels so honest.
Yeah.
You know, this basically spy thriller movie feels honest because of that. But I really responded to that. And, you know, something else is the fact that they didn't try and shoehorn in a new love interest every movie.
Yeah.
You watch the first one, and him getting together with Famke Potente.
Franca.
Seems a little
you're
like, okay, here we go.
You're thinking of Famke Janssen.
Yeah, I'm... You're right. But I knew that wasn't Jansen. You know, the first movie, it seems like them getting together is a little forced and a little like, okay, the studio said they had to have a sex scene here, so fine. But then, really, in the second and third movie, you know, they went with it. And they went with it in a very believable way, as opposed to, like, Indiana Jones, where there's some new love interest, everything, or Bond, where that's part of the point, is there some new chippy every movie.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it was really like, no, that was it. And they refer to it, and I just really reacted well to that as well. So, just, I don't know, Paul Greengrass is amazing that he's able to do that within a large studio system and yeah. not get overtaken.
Yeah, well, it's pretty clear. He's developed a style, and in a certain respect, he probably had to fight for that, like with the first movie. But by the time this movie came around, it's pretty clear they just let him steer clear and say, make the movie. I guess the connection would be like with Ridley Scott, who has a very visible style, has a very incredible way of directing. But his first movies, you listen to the commentary tracks, and it was a huge fight because he was dealing with assistants and assistant directors and other stuff who were actively working against him. Hmm. And then now it's just this love fest. Everybody goes in and works with Ridley, and I get the feeling that's kind of the area that Greengrass has cut out for himself too.
I also saw the Simpsons movie.
Oh yeah, what'd you think of
that? Saw that at the at the tail end of the Comic-Con vacation, when Comic-Con was all done and my wife and I were there for an extra day, we went to see the Simpsons movie. Quite enjoyed it.
Yep.
Actually, funnier than I was expecting. And, you know, the way they were able to finally make the movie is they used writers they had used in the past but weren't currently working on the show.
Yep.
And that was really the only way they could do it. But they used writers, good writers. It wasn't like cast-offs. So, lots of good jokes. In terms of actually translating it to a movie, I thought they did a good job, as opposed to it just being an hour and a half long episode.
Yeah.
You know, it did feel, you know, the animation, so there were some good 3D moves in there. It was beautiful, and very funny. There were some laugh-out-loud moments. And the only two things are, A, you want it to be longer, because you're enjoying it. I mean, it was like 90 minutes. It was a standard animated comedy because they're all 90 minutes. And also that you wanted to see more of the supporting cast members, you know, Apu and Disco Stew and, you know, whoever it is you formed an attachment to over the years.
Yeah, I heard they just kind of come in and go pretty instantly.
Right. But of course, that's one of the battles that you have to fight as you're writing this, you know, because you're dealing with a show that's been around for 20 years, some god-awful amount of years.
18.
That's had this incredible supporting cast that everyone loves. And it's, you know, it, of course, if you up the supporting cast, then you reduce the amount of time the actual Simpsons are in it. So I totally understand why they did it. But those are the only two little things I wish were different.
But you know, have you seen the little video trailer for the new Simpsons game?
I don't think so.
It's on EA, and it's weird. I can't figure out what the game's called or anything, because the website for it calls it Grand Theft Scratchy, which it's basically, you remember they did a video game a couple years ago, the Simpsons Hit and Run,
yeah.
Which was basically a version, like a Grand Theft Auto style game, and it was really well done. I mean, all things considered, it was an excellent game, and this one here, according to the trailer, they just call it The Simpsons Game, but it's on a website that says Grand Theft Scratchy, and it's on the EA website. And a couple things about it. One is, I don't know where the Grand Theft Scratchy thing's coming from, because they don't own the rights to the name Grand Theft anything, so I'm sort of surprised that they did that unless they had some agreement. And I get the feeling that's just a joke and they haven't named it yet or something. Mm-hmm. But even as a joke, I'm surprised they would use that. But second of all, watching the video of the game, and it's like this small, low resolution thing, but I was stunned. It looked really, very cartoon like. It looked almost like a living, breathing cartoon of a Simpsons episode. And to a certain extent, I'm thinking, boy, I wonder if they're going to put tools together a la Red and Blue and Machinima kind of stuff, because holy geez, I could see you could easily make a really effective Simpsons cartoon using this, the basis of these tools. I mean, it looked, just in that low res, the world it was in, I'm going, my God, just briefly, it looked like I was in a Simpsons episode. I was stunned. It was, you know, maybe if I look at it bigger, it'd be different. But anyway, so you hadn't seen that. You should check it out. It's on the EA website under Grand Theft Scratchy.
I will do so. Let's see, what else is happening? Oh, I saw Stardust last weekend.
Yeah, what did you think of that?
Really enjoyed it.
Not too busy?
Richard tries to hide the microphone from his opening up a granola bar wrapper. Absolutely. Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle. No, I thought they did a really good job of translating, essentially, you know, a fairly complex story into a movie. And, you know, I saw Neil Gaiman at San Diego, and he said, you know, people ask him, what do you think of this compared to what you wrote? And he said, this is a very good movie. And he said, and he's, you know, sitting right next to the person who wrote the screenplay, and he said, you know, she did a fantastic job of translating it. Now, it's not a direct translation. There are things in the book and in the comic that aren't in the movie that couldn't be because they don't work. There are things in the movie that weren't in the book because they wouldn't have worked. And he's exactly right. I'm a huge fan of the comic. I have the book. I honestly haven't read it, which is somewhat ironic for me. But I thought it worked very well. I thought the acting was great. The special effects were great. I don't know what the budget was for this, but it was easily on par with a, you know, $200 million effects-laden fantasy film. But, you know, I think it was more like 70 or 60, something like that. Sort of an on-the-cheap fantasy film. It looked fantastic. The one complaint I had was that I was very conscious of the musical score.
Right.
Of feeling like, well, this is a little overblown. Like, it's like they're trying to do Lord of the Rings style, you know, these sweeping countryside wide helicopter shots, and there's this, you know, very bombastic score, which I don't know if it was just the theater was turned a little too loud speaker-wise, or if they mixed it too loud for the mixing, or what, but I was cognizant of the score, and I really shouldn't have been.
They do that a lot lately where they'll turn the theaters up and it'll be, and literally it actually hurts. Thinking, what is going on? Although it's funny, I saw Superbad the other night and it was quieter than I think it should have been. And pointedly, because people are laughing so hard, a lot of jokes totally missed because people were laughing, which is cool because you want to go see it again. But it was like, damn, turn it up. I'm literally missing these jokes.
Well, what it made me want was more of a minimalist score, like having one violin or one flute or one bongo or something, you know, something that would go with the period, but would be very minimalist as opposed to this, you know, full orchestra sound.
If I was ever a director, I'd be totally screwed because I have no ear for that. And I am starting to put those scores in. It would always feel obtrusive to me and I could never be able to tell, is this too much or too little? I would be awful.
Right. I would just know if I like it or don't like it. I'll hear
directors talk about how much they love and what a great job this person did on this score and how beautiful it was. And I'm so oblivious to that, except for when it sticks out in a negative way. I'm completely oblivious. So it would be tough.
And there, you saw the Rescue Dawn.
Oh, yeah, we saw Rescue Dawn.
Great movie.
Werner Herzog trying to kill people in the jungle. It's a good movie. It actually looked pretty good considering they probably spent only $10 million on it. Reading the production diaries, it's a typical Herzog movie. It's his first supposed Hollywood movie, but it's not really Hollywood. It was money by people that ran, like, I don't know, some casino or something. And they, you know, they basically ran out of money filming this movie, apparently. But it came out as pretty good, and Christian Bale is pretty good. And I'm constantly amazed. I mean, the guy... Literally, he doesn't look as skeletal as he did in The Machinist, but he clearly lost 50 pounds for this movie. And I think he did this movie right after Batman and right before the second Batman. And I'm thinking, damn, dude. I mean, I guess he's young enough where he can do that to his body, but wow, that is some up and down on the weight. You know, really tough. Anyway, pretty good movie. Pretty affecting.
You know what else I saw this week? Sunshine. That?
Is that the Danny Boyle thing?
Science fiction.
What do you think of that?
I've been wanting to see this since I heard about it.
Is it out?
Yes.
I didn't even
know
that's
the
out.
Trick is it did not have a single wide release weekend in America.
So it was just like throwing it across.
It's marching.
They did that with Millions
slowly.
Too. They kind of released that across the country in a weird way.
And I looked it up, and it wasn't playing before Comic-Con. I got back and I asked John, is it playing yet? And he said no, but then I looked it up and it turns out it was playing at like the Neptune, Pacific Place, and then Redmond Town Center and the Galleria in Bellevue.
It is floating around.
But then we couldn't, because of my retarded work schedule, we couldn't end up seeing it that week. And then it contracted and it wasn't playing in Redmond anymore, but it was still at the Galleria. And God, I hate those theaters. I don't hate them. They're just really, really creepy.
That's the one you have to go take the elevator.
Yeah,
the same.
It's right next to the Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. And it used to be there was like a Hoot, or I don't know if the Hooter's still there, but the Tower Records.
The Tower Records used to be there before they went belly up, and now it's an LA Fitness. Well, it's also, that was the first area where you had to pay to park in Bellevue.
That was like a stunning.
And Bellevue's a suburb of Seattle, and you know, part of the point of living in the suburbs is you don't have to pay to park because there's all this gigantic space to pave over with parking lots.
I remember the first time going in there, going, wow, we have to. I mean, I could not believe I had to pay. I'd never. Well, it was.
And as a consequence, there was a Good Guys and a Barnes & Noble next door that suddenly had to put a booth in and chain off their lot.
Yep.
So to go to the Barnes & Noble and park there, you had to validate. And it was a gigantic pain. And I never go there anymore because of that.
You know, that Good Guys a long time ago was a movie theater. It was called the John Dan's Theater. And that's some of my favorite memories of childhood are seen there.
The Good Guys is went belly up, and now it's like an Underhill's Furniture.
Well, a long time ago, it was like the theater in Bellevue you went to. I remember seeing Huckleberry Finn there when I was a kid. I remember seeing a couple other theaters. And I remember seeing one of the last movies ever played there before they closed it down, which was In the Name of the Father with that Irish movie where the guy's stuck in prison.
Oh, yeah, I actually saw that. That was Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep.
And,
but it was one of those classic big theaters like the Cinerama that was like a big theater.
The external hard drive is
teetering.
Yeah. Oh.
So, well, I'll just not touch it and it won't fall over, hopefully.
The Galleria, it's just really creepy because it's like a Hallett cinema. And it's like the only one in the area, so it's not Regal, it's not AMC, or whoever's, Sony or Lowe's. It's not a big chain, it's clearly a small chain. And you go up to the box office, and there's like a printed sign, we are not Regal, we are not whatever. So I don't know if people are trying to use gift cards or whatever. But you go inside, it's very dark, they've got this weird blue and pink neon lighting. And then you go in and you sit in the theater, and instead of like the 20 or the slideshow Coke-altainment, which is, the slideshow with a Coke logo on every slide. They've got, like, a do-it-yourself PowerPoint presentation with, like, trivia Starburst. And it's just really, it seems low rent.
Yeah.
But they're the only theater on the east side playing Sunshine.
Have you been to the Lincoln Square one yet?
Yeah, that's where we saw Talladega Nights.
That's supposed to be super great.
It is, but of course it's more expensive.
Oh.
So, anyway,
and that matters. It never matters to me.
You know, it used to matter more, but as my work schedule, because I used to get off at 3:30 every day, and I would just all the time I'd go see afternoon movies for bargain price. It was awesome. Of course, I wasn't making any money.
Yep.
So now it's just like whenever I can see a movie, I see a movie. I'm much less sensitive to pricing. Anyway, Sunshine. I really enjoyed it. You know, I had heard, sort of through Hollywood Elsewhere, Jeffrey Wells' site, that
the ending was horrible.
Well, that there were third act problems.
Yeah.
And that's almost a verbatim quote, third act problems. And whether you decided that meant the ending was horrible or not was sort of up to you and very subjective. But A, it looked fantastic. You know, and this is basically an English film, or funded, I think it was funded by English sources, but basically not a Hollywood film.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like a Hollywood film. It does not look in any way, shape, or form low rent or B-movie. So they did a fantastic use of how they spent their money in terms of that. Paced very well. A great group of actors, some of whom, people have heard of, like you know, Cillian Murphy.
Yep.
Who was the Scarecrow in Batman and was in 28 Days Later.
I think it's like Red Eye. I think it's pronounced. I can't remember. I heard it pronounced.
I honestly don't know. Michelle Yeoh is in it.
Yep.
And that's probably it for people have heard of. But it's a great ensemble cast. And then, yeah, there's some third act issues, and it kind of takes a moment to just accept what's going on. And then you accept it, and you're like, okay, whatever. And it was really interesting the way he chose to film some of the ending scenes that were deliberately out of focus.
Yep.
And you're like, wow, I've never actually seen that. And on one hand, it's a little annoying, but on the other hand, you know, kudos to you, Danny Boyle, for having the balls to do this. And then I enjoyed the film. I really did.
Cool.
It's not a fantastic film. I don't know if it's a super film. The more I reflect on it, the better it gets. But
I'm just surprised that release. I thought it was, I'd heard more about it. I just sort of surprised it.
I went and looked up the Wikipedia entry, and it's really interesting how it's been a staggered release all around the world.
Mm.
France and it's trickling through America, and it sounds like it's almost made back its budget.
Hmm.
Which is a little disappointing. I would really like this film to have made, you know, a big profit to encourage more films like this.
It might do well on DVD. I mean, look at even Hot Fuzz, which did okay over here, but it's like the number one or number two movie in America on DVD.
The difference with Hot Fuzz, it had a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for a couple of mentions on Ain't It Cool, and they showed the poster, I it might have completely slipped through my notice.
Yeah.
Honestly. Whereas Hot Fuzz, I don't watch that much TV, but every show I watched, Hot Fuzz was on.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy the musical score, because I had just seen Stardust a couple days earlier, and it's somewhat minimalist, but I thought, you know what, this stands out to Stardust in terms of being really non-intrusive and really being interesting to me.
Yeah.
So you saw Superbad.
Yeah.
Let's reflect more on that.
I liked it. I thought it was funny. It was a good movie. It was the audience.
Where did you see it?
Up at Montlake 9, 10 o'clock on a Sunday or Friday. And it was just full of high school kids.
Oh,
and just the whole audience was just a million different things were driving me nuts. But when the actual movie got going, it was good. I saw it with our buddy Mark, who slept through most of the movie.
Why does he?
I don't know why. Because he knows he wants to go out, knows he wants to do everything else. But, I mean, the guy had been working 12 hours that day on a roof, you know, he's clearly going to be tired. I feel bad. He told me to, you know, help keep him awake. So I literally hit him about 10 times during the movie. But, you know, you couldn't really get into it.
What was your take on the cop storyline?
I literally thought they were fine and great. I thought they were funny. I thought they were broad, and then later, to a certain extent, they explain that they were that, and I thought it fitted in absolutely fine within the context of the movie. I think part of it was that the other people were reacting. They felt that the other parts of the storyline were incredibly real and honest, and then this was out of left field, and I'm looking at the other part of the storyline going, yeah, you're on crack if you think that's incredibly real and honest. It's equally crazy in other respects.
What it does is it feels more honest.
No, I understand that, yeah. But I'm saying that I think if somebody were to sit back and watch this again after the initial thing, they're probably going to find it being more archetypal. They're probably going to find it not quite as what, and they're going to see it all in context better. I certainly did not think it was particularly bad. There was parts that were just, I mean, I think what they're saying is just completely unreasonable this happening. Well, of course, but tons of that movie is completely unreasonable happening. But I did love that whole character. I love the McLovin character. That is really, the more I thought about it, just the funniest thing ever. He And that in of itself is stupid. I mean, the guy's going to Princeton, and it is funny, but that he would come up with a single name, McLovin.
I'm McLovin.
That's funny.
It's, and I love the dialogue and the interplay between Jonah Hill and Michael Cera.
Yep.
I thought it was brilliant. And like, you know, when, oh, hey, that's so-and-so. Didn't she have breast reduction surgery? That's a crime against nature. Oh, look, she's jogging. And they start running after her. And, you know, and it's, you know, they're having an argument as friends over how to get booze before that. And all of a sudden, you know, breasts come into the picture, and they're right on the same page, and they're totally like buddy-buddy. And coming back, and he's like, well, you know, maybe it was a safety health concern, and having a very legitimate, serious political level discussion about this woman's breast size. And
did you see the link I sent you from that video he did, the spoof of that that Russian dude that did his video resume?
I saw the link. I didn't see the.
It's funny. I mean, the original guy was that Russian dude who did he supposedly went to Yale or something. He did this video resume where his name's like Dmitry something, and it's like Dmitry something, complete person, and they show him taking ballroom lessons, lifting weights, as he talks about, as he alludes to the fact that he's like a trained assassin, and how and he reads the book, and it is so funny because it's so bad. I mean, it was so bad. It was like the New York Times did an article about it. Oops. Well, there it fell. The New York Times did an article about it, but anyway, they did a, Michael Cera did a spoof of it, and it's hilarious. And I sent you the link saying, you know, the thing about Michael Cera is he's occupying that same place in my brain that Jack Black did 6 years ago, whomever did a couple of years ago. Everything, like Borat, you know, could be every single thing he does, I look at and I think it's funny and hilarious. And I get this thing, a couple of years from now, I'm going to be totally worn off of Michael Cera, because it's just the nature of the beast. Right now, literally everything he does, I find is funny and hilarious. And I feel bad in a sense, because I'm going, I don't think I'll be saying that 3 years from now, unless he is completely different in some way.
I don't know. I look at Superbad and I thought, he is a great actor.
Yep.
I thought he did a great job. I mean, he's not really, he's sort of playing the same George Michael-ish type. And yet, I thought, you know what? The more I think about it, the more he really, as an actor, did a great job.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say about Superbad? They were talking about in the Q&A in San Diego that the incident at the party with the girl dancing, I don't want to give away the joke,
yep,
but the really embarrassing part with the girl dancing actually happened.
On the spot, on at the, what, huh?
That actually happened at a party, I guess.
Oh,
Seth
so
Rogen,
that's where
was
it came
at.
From, yeah.
Yeah, so that was not made. And that was the one, yuck. I mean, that was the moment in the film, everyone's like, oh, and I was pretty quick to realize what had actually happened, and I was like, that is. And you could tell it was a while before the rest of the theater at least vocally caught on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everyone goes, oh.
Yeah, it was. Most people in the audience thought in our thing he had put a beer bottle down there and it broke and he had cut himself. I guess maybe I'm giving a little too much
away. Giving away a lot of the joy. That's okay. Anything else movie-wise going on before we transition to...
Haven't seen anything else.
There's not... There was a brief flurry of activity, and now
nothing.
I'm not sure what.
I don't know what's on the horizon.
Yeah.
Well, wait. When is like? Oh no, that's like not for a while. I was thinking Batman, but what the hell?
They're still filming that.
Yeah, I can't think of what else is coming up. The trailers were all uniformly dumb teen movies, which clearly that's who they thought their audience was. So nothing I was interested. Yeah, don't know.
We have not done our research. Not a whole lot going on TV wise. It's a very
slow. Oh yeah, but I downloaded last week. I don't know. It cost me a lot of money. I don't know why, I'm an idiot. But on iTunes, I downloaded the entire season 1 and 2 of Weeds. Man, what a great show!
It's a great show
on Showtime, the other network, and it's just really funny and well done and great, and Mary Louise Parker is friggin' awesome. Anyway, great show. The other one I started downloading was Mad Men, that thing on AMC about that takes place in like an ad agency around 1960, Very well done. In a way, it's somewhat like The Sopranos, although not in most ways, but in the fact that these characters are all generally, there's no real heroes and non-heroes. It's just people and doing crappy things and good things and very in with the times, especially how they're developing advertising campaigns and other stuff. It's like an excellent, excellent show.
You have you watched any Colbert's recently?
Yeah, a few. I re-downloaded that as a subscription.
Yeah, I've seen a few. My system records them all, but have you followed any of the whole he broke his wrist thing?
I missed the initial ones. I remember hearing about it online, and now when I see him, I see the wrist thing, and he'll mention it.
Yeah. Well, the one I happened to watch, he was promoting his wrist strong bracelets, yeah. Which I thought was brilliant. I mean, what a brilliant writing crew, and he's got wrist strong bracelets, and he says, you know, and I've been handing them out to my audiences, and they're under strict orders to, if they meet someone more famous than themselves, give it to them with the instructions when they meet someone more famous than them, hand it off. And he gave one to Katie Couric, and she was supposed to wear it that night on the news, and she didn't. And he's like, what a And he's, you know, and he's got a extra large version to actually fit around a cast.
Yep.
And I was just, these guys are so brilliant.
Well, I did see that they decided they're heavily promoting that they are going to show the Richard Branson fight that was
which I hadn't heard about until I saw that episode.
Oh,
he's talking about it.
I thought I sent you the link.
Colbert, you might have. I've only read about half the links you sent me this week.
Damn, that was like 2 weeks ago. Though.
It was it
was on Boing Boing. Somebody was in the audience and saying how painful and uncomfortable it was. And
but also that. He had a guy talking about how mass culture is and the internet is bad, or amateurs on the internet is bad.
Oh, that guy.
And the guy was talking about, aren't you going to be deposed in this YouTube lawsuit? And which, you know, somebody said that one of the plaintiffs wants to depose Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert to talk about their shows being on YouTube.
Yep.
And Colbert says, they have to catch me first. You can't serve a subpoena if someone has their, you know, basically has their thumb in their ears going, la, 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 la. It was really funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just, I wish I had more time to watch Colbert more regularly.
Yeah.
I guess that's it for TV.
We're waiting for the new CSI and others to come up next month.
Video games.
So did you download the BioShock and the
downloading something
one?
Would require me to actually have a functioning Xbox 360.
Oh, God, you still don't have that thing back yet?
So 2 weeks ago, because I got the Forza wheel. And I need to start practicing with it, and because I'm part of a league that actually does races every week. When I start practicing with it, and it locks up. And at first I thought it was a problem with the driver for the wheel.
Yeah.
Because it actually comes with the force feedback version of Project Gotham Racing 3. Yep. And you're supposed to put that disc in first, and it's got the driver, but it didn't say anything. It didn't say it was downloading any new software.
Yep.
So I wasn't really sure. So I try it again, and it locks up somewhere else, and I'm like, oh, crud. And then I get a hardware failure with the three red lights, which indicates a hardware failure.
Damn.
And then I unplug it for 30 seconds, and it's back working, and I'm like, well, this doesn't make any sense. So I put in a different game, and it locks up. And then I try an Xbox Live Arcade game to see if it's a problem with the optical drive. And I played Uno for about 10 minutes before it effectively locked up. And then I got another hardware failure.
Is Uno the card game?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know there was an Xbox for that.
You know, and then I'm taking the hard drive out. I'm trying a game without the hard drive, and it's still locking up. So it's basically giving me really inconsistent failures. And I call support, and they say, you know, we'll send you out the
we'll
box,
send, you the
send
coffin.
It in. So it's out of warranty, but they, you know, we haven't really discussed it. Microsoft extended the hardware failure warranty by 3 years,
yeah.
Or 2-3 years. So assuming that it's the hardware, you know, it's so funny. Microsoft has not officially admitted that they have an overheating problem,
nope.
And yet everyone knows it's an overheating issue. When people start taking apart the refurbs or the new units and say, oh, look, there's a heat sink in here that wasn't in here before.
Yeah, gigantic heat sink.
Maybe you've got a heating issue.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand if they admit that, maybe there's some legal culpability and suddenly they're on the hook for even more money. You know, but Microsoft takes a $1.3 billion write-down.
I guess I should just feel lucky that it never happened to me so far, knock on wood.
So, yeah, I sent mine in, and I, you know, of course, now they made sort of a big deal about how you can track your repair process online. And so I look at it, and it says, you know, it says, out of warranty, no repair is pending on this unit. That's even worse than... And you're like, what does that mean?
Sitting there.
Does that mean that they decided it's not a hardware failure, but then apparently they're supposed to send me an email saying, you know, it's going to cost $99 to fix whatever's wrong with it? Or, But then I did a search on that specific term, and other people have had this issue, and people think, well, what they're probably doing is they're sending you another unit, whether new or refurb, but of course that has a new serial number, which isn't then plugged into that service request on the website. So really, that's what is the point of tracking your serial number on the website?
I know, if it's for a unit.
If they're not going to at the same time, if they send you a new unit, they really need to associate that serial number with your service request. Otherwise...
So do you have any idea when you're going to get the damn thing back?
No.
Jesus.
I think the last time it took 3 to 4 weeks, so this is coming into the third week. When I checked the status yesterday, it still said that.
Where do they get sent to?
Texas. I think it's McAllen to me. So I'm very hopeful that clearly the refurbs they're sending out or the new units have this heat sink. So hopefully if it is that issue, that's handled. However, sometimes they send you new units instead of a refurb, and I'm really crossing my fingers because now the new units have an HDMI port.
Yeah.
And I won't be pissed if I don't get it because I paid for a unit without one. I have no expectation to get one. But if I did, it would be super awesome because I could finally route 1080p signals through to my TV, which only accepts 1080p through the HDMI port. And sort of, you know, we were talking about this last week. Suddenly the HD DVD drive is a valid option again.
Yeah.
And I have to think about that, but more than that, I was also thinking, there's a program that lets the Xbox 360 talk to your Mac. It's like $30 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Use it the same way you use Media Extender through XP or Vista.
Yep.
And so if I get 1080p stuff on my Mac, and I route it through the Xbox to my TV, I almost don't need an Apple TV.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. I was like, unless Apple, you know, and so I'm sure Apple's working on some upgrade to the service, which makes it more valuable, because right now there actually is no HD content supplied by Apple, which is an incredible oversight.
Yeah, you don't know where they're going with that, although the quality of their stuff is really high quality.
I'm sure they're not stupid. I'm sure they're working on it, but to me, the fact that the Xbox Live download service is the only way you can get HD content.
Yeah, and it's way slower than...
You have to wonder, is it an issue that, you know, Xbox is building that up? Is there a penalty to Apple for Microsoft being first out of the box with HD downloadable content or not? Or will it just not matter?
I went online the other day. I hadn't looked at my Xbox subscription. I have like $10 that I can spend, hadn't done anything for like 4 months. And I thought, well, I'll go and because I don't have cable. Maybe I'll download some TV show and watch it. There isn't a single new TV show at all. There isn't one in the last 4 months. Now, part of that's because there's no new seasons, but they're putting nothing on there. They're not putting on old shows. They're not putting on anything. It's painful.
They added a studio. Yeah, movie studio, and it's not...
Well, I don't really care about movies.
Right,
I'm just talking about TV shows.
It's weird, because they're not stupid. They're trying to add content.
Well, they're maybe trying, but trying and succeeding are two different things.
That does seem like quite...
Ridiculous. I mean, here I am, a customer that's willing to spend money, and there's nothing on there. If I want to buy last season CSI, I'm set. But if I want to buy Mad Men or Weeds or Digging for the Truth or Mythbusters or anything else that I can buy real easily on iTunes, it's nowhere to be found.
Huh.
You know, it's really kind of pathetic, to tell you the honest truth.
Well, and what pisses me off more and more about... having a broken Xbox is the more of these functions you consolidate into one machine and then it breaks. What if the only way I could get shows, you know, I didn't have iTunes, I didn't have, you know, satellite. What if it was just through Xbox Live download, which is valid. People do that, I'm sure. But then the Xbox breaks and suddenly you're without that for 3 weeks.
Yep.
You know, what if that's your only DVD player? You're without that for 3 or 4 weeks. That's honestly unacceptable.
Yeah, no,
it really is.
I agree.
And part of the, you know, I got excited about routing 1080p content from my Mac through the Xbox onto my TV, but I can't do that right now because honestly, my Mac isn't beefy enough to run to output full screen 1080p without significant stuttering issues.
Yeah, if they start putting out more stuff subscription based like iTunes and other stuff. So let's say you like buy a subscription to CSI and it comes down and you start morphing into that, then it gets to the point that your Xbox is similar to a cable box, and meaning the Xbox is just the vehicle for you to be able to get this content. And at that point, a 3 to 4 week wait is not tolerable at all. If your cable box breaks down, you call the cable company. They're out in a couple of days and giving you a new cable box.
God, I would love to know what the actual failure rate on the Xbox 360 is. You know, they have constantly said it's within, you know, norms for the industry. You know, but I
find that really completely hard to believe when you hear stories about. I mean, how many you've had and how many people have. Multiple. The fact that people would have multiple issues tells me that it's got to be approaching like 40% or something.
Well, it's extremely hard to quantify because, you know, today's world of the internet and everyone having a blog and having all this information, certainly the people that, you know, the guy who's gone through 7 of them,
yeah.
Everyone knows that guy is out there. And when you have... You know, and it's the problem of, are the people that are having the issues much more vocal than the vast majority, like yourself, that aren't having issues? You're not on there making blog posts every day. My Xbox is fine.
Yeah.
It's the people, it's me, you know, this is my second failure. This will be my third Xbox that, you know, and that's ridiculous. But, you know, is it me and 10 people like you? Is it me and 20 people like you?
Yep.
Or is it me and 5 people like you? You just don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Which is really frustrating and really makes you want to know what the failure rates are. But it really seems like it has to be over industrial norms or norms for the industry. It has to be.
So let's talk about the games for the Xbox that you can't play.
Or did you want to mock me for your increased gamer score?
I haven't increased it in a while, but
yeah, but you're still like 600 points over me, and you.
Well, that's only because I played like Prey and finished that. So, but every game save for Gears of War, I've managed to tie or best you on your score. So clearly, I'm a better gamer. I mean, there's no getting around that.
But, I think part of it is, I mean, I don't know if we work about the same hours, but you tend to work more than I do. But you're not married, so you can come home after work and spend maybe 4 hours at a shot playing games.
Yeah.
And I can do that once in a while. I'm not, you know, it's not like she'll...
If that's the if that's your explanation, we'll go with that one.
I'm just saying, as much as there are days I would just like to play Xbox for the rest of the evening, it's not fair to my wife.
I
need to spend wife time and... That being said, clearly when I get my Xbox back, I told her, I said, look, there's going to be like a weekend or two where I just need to play video games all damn day.
Damn.
And you, whatever. That's the way it is, woman.
Well, suffice it to say, they have these two new downloads that came out. And I don't know how I missed that this BioShock was coming out.
I don't know how you did either.
I know it's been coming out, but what I didn't anticipate... was the rapturous receipt of this game by the gaming intelligentsia.
It's been
literally
getting perfect scores.
It's getting the kind of score 2 got when it came out, which is okay, there's games, and then this, the greatest game in the history of games. And it's getting these 100 out of 100 scores, and 10 out of 10 scores, and 99 out of 100 scores, and it's stunning the critical acclaim this thing's getting.
So did you play the demo?
Yes, played
the
demo.
What did you think?
thought it was great. Although it's hard to know how deep the game will be, but it's very well thought through. Essentially, it was it's this world, this underwater world created by a guy named Andrew Rand, and it's clearly an acronym of Ayn Rand, or Andrew Carr, or something where that's like clearly Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
And it very well realized this kind of failed utopian positivism kind of society that has just kind of fallen apart for a lot of reasons. And the little parts you play here, you can see, wow, I can see how this is going to be clever and good. And reading the reviews, apparently it's very consistently good, and it's very creepy in a lot of parts of
it's driving me bonkers that I can't download the demo and play it, because it's really driven home for me how effective downloadable demos are.
Yeah.
And say, and you know, and in giving you an awesome tool for saying this is worth the hype, I will buy this game, versus we were at dinner with a friend last night, and he was saying he downloaded the demo for Overlord.
Yeah.
And said, you know what, I thought I would like this game, but I don't, so I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
And versus, or just sometimes the demo is all you need to say, wow, you know what, I'm really glad I played that, because clearly I stink at this game. Or, well, you know what? I got enough enjoyment out of just the demo. I don't need to drop $60 on the full thing.
Well, it's funny. It's one of those demos where they lead you into the world and do stuff. And the demo is like an hour, but I had to stop, and you can't save the thing. So I had to like sit through the cinematic again to play it again. Now, once you know what you're doing, it's like a 2-minute demo, because now you know what you're doing and where to go, which was kind of cool. The other, but it's definitely the best looking, bar none, Xbox 360 game ever. I mean, it just is incredible looking. The other one I played was Stranglehold, or whatever it's called.
Oh, the John Woo.
The John Woo one. And it's actually kind of fun. It's ridiculous. It's basically, and did a pretty good job of translating a John Woo movie, you being a character. It's just hundreds and hundreds of Hong Kong gangsters coming after you as you shoot, and you can constantly, the name of the character, which is so stupid, was, his name was like Johnny Tequila in the movie Hard Boiled. So you go into tequila time, which it goes into like a sepia tone, and then you can shoot and shoot people, and it's funny, you're going through these really big sets, and apparently the reason for the world watermelon shortage is they're all here in Hong Kong on the set of this thing, because you're shooting so many watermelons so they can explode. You know, they're just stacked everywhere in this little scene. And the moves are all like the movie, where you're jumping on and riding down some rail and shooting people. It's really stupid, but actually kind of fun. The only thing I didn't like is many times you go for one shot, and then it stops and immediately cuts to a cinematic. And there's way too much of that cinematic. I'd rather just play through it. And then there's other times when you earn the right to have this golden bullet thing where basically time stops, and you can zoom way in and pick a spot on where you want to shoot the guy, and then you shoot it, and then all of a sudden it stops, so, and then you follow the bullet to him as if it goes in his face. You see him in slow motion get shot in the face, or in the arm, or in the crotch, or whatever. It's actually kind of good. I don't know. They spent an enormous amount of money on this. I remember hearing that they spent like $30, $40 million making this game.
Huh.
And they're really putting a lot into it. And it was, I think it's, at least so far, it's paying off on what it is. It just looked kind of fun, but not the kind of emotional experience that BioShock delivers. My understanding of BioShock is it just really is fantastically immersive, and you really connect with the game. It'll be interesting when Half-Life 2 comes out, and I'll play through that again and go, wonder if I'll have the same reaction I had 3 years ago when I played it, because things have moved on.
I have to really... I had not planned on buying BioShock.
Yep.
And now I might have to readjust that. I might have to get it anyway. But I'm starting to come. I want to pace myself, because I only have so many hours I can play video games.
They say this is a 15 to 20 hour game.
Well,
and I always play on casual at the beginning. I might go back later, but I just
play
don't
normal.
Care.
I usually do whatever the default is. I don't need to, you know. I don't, whatever. But it's, you know, Halo 3 end of September, which, you know, obviously I'm getting. And then Half-Life 2 in October, I think towards the end of October. So those are the two I know I'm, no question I'm getting. And then there's some others that, you know, Assassin's Creed, I know it looks cool, but will I have enough
time?
When
is that coming out?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting that, definitely getting Grand Theft Auto, and they're all, like, basically 2 months
spacing. Grand Theft Auto, I'm not, so I don't, that one doesn't affect me. And I thought there might have been.
Those games are awesome. I don't understand why you're not intrigued by those games.
And so I don't know. Maybe there's a window for BioShock in there. Although it's frustrating in terms of I haven't pre-ordered anything.
I never do that. Screw it.
And it's, you know, I'm trying to. I wouldn't pre-order from, you know, Electronics Boutique or GameStop or one of those because I can't stand endorsing that behavior there.
Oh, I agree.
So then it's, well, do I pre-order from like buy.com, which, you know, which I normally get a fair amount of stuff through there, but will it show up on time?
Jesus, I just, there's like, they're printing up many copies of these.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like Halo 2, I just went to Costco that day and I was fine.
Exactly.
But Costco is such a,
apparently Toys R Us screwed up and they started selling BioShock a couple days ago.
I don't understand how you don't, especially with video games, how do you not know when it's supposed to go on the shelf?
Well, I think part of it, Toys R Us traditionally sells kids' games, and this is more of an adult game, but the kids' games, they don't have the they just ship them out. They don't, it's not like the others where it's this huge embargo.
Well, it's, I mean, it seems like things are released on Tuesday, so it seems like that's an industry norm. Like, music is released on
Tuesday. Well, suffice
it to
say, Toys R Us in particular, it was pretty clear somebody screwed big time because it wasn't one store. It was like every Toys R Us. So it was somebody did, or a lot of them. That's what I heard. So apparently it was just,
although from Tycho's post on Penny Arcade, he was saying basically that he went around to a bunch of them and couldn't find any. So
yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Speaking of, it's next week
weekend, and we don't have a plan. I don't know that it's gonna work.
This damn golf tournament that I totally. I mean, I can go Sunday. I can go. Well, I probably can't go Friday, but I've got this damn golf tournament, so I'm screwed. I might go on Sunday, but yeah, I'm totally screwed. And then the following weekend, I'm going to L.A.
Well, that's Labor Day weekend. I don't know.
Is that Labor Day weekend? Oh my God,
that's what my wife said yesterday, and I just started groaning. I'm like,
geez, I wonder if they're going to be able to get me a flight down then. Because
why not?
I don't know, because usually that's when people are flying on their vacations.
LA is a pretty popular destination. I have a feeling.
I should more accurately say, I wonder if they can get me a flight where I'm not stuck in the middle seat. Because that's what I made clear. I said, I don't care what you do. I just need, you can put me in first class or put me on an aisle, but nothing else. And I don't know if that'll play out.
I don't know what to do about BioShock. Interesting. You know, listening to Major Nelson's podcast, and he talked to Kevin Levine, which I guess is the head creative dude for BioShock.
Yeah,
there's no multiplayer.
I know.
And they're very unapologetic about saying, you know what? Some games it works for, others it didn't. We didn't want to shoehorn something that didn't work in.
I forgot to mention that. I was so excited to hear and read. Because honest to God, I just am not a multiplayer person. I love a really well-done game that is, has no interest of having a multiplayer component. I just am not interested in that, and you just can feel the resources being sucked away from the game while they're trying to work on that, and I'm thinking, good, the only thing they thought through is this. They can move away from this ridiculous multiplayer love that they have, you know. And especially in a certain respect with console gamings, there's no actual added money made for multiplayer. You know, in some of the other ones,
yes,
you could be because you had to sign on. Well, no, there is, but if you're BioShock and you're playing multiplayer, but you're basically paying money to Microsoft for the Xbox Live account.
Yeah, no, it's, I think where the money for the publisher is in downloadable content, map packs or stuff like that. And there's not a lot of those, but they are out there. Or, you know, I think they just work it into part of the business plan, saying that it's part of the overall value of the $60 is you get a multiplayer aspect.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. Spend that all of that money on a single player. I don't want that.
Well, a lot of people like multiplayer.
I know.
I understand
you. And I appreciate that they like that.
Did you see
that? But every once in a while, throw me a bone and do something that doesn't even have that as an issue.
Did you see that stat last week that 30% of Xbox 360 owners are unaware of Xbox Live Arcade?
Jesus.
It was on, like, Joystick and those
websites. Well, a huge percentage do not connect to the internet. They don't. They're not even aware of Xbox Live to a certain extent.
Well,
they're,
and I can't remember if that number was in the same pie chart or not, but the thrust was Xbox Live Arcade itself. And it's I get that. If you don't have broadband, you don't have broadband, and it's still, you can still play amazing games, but so much of the service and what's differentiating Microsoft from Sony is how well they're executing the live service.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked in the past about how it's clear that downloadable content is going to be the distribution method of games going forward. There's going to be a point where you don't need to buy the disc.
Yeah.
Just flat out. And although what you just said, if you don't have the internet, that's not going to work. And you have to wonder where, because clearly they, you know, Microsoft and Sony have done research. They know where the percentage is where suddenly it's worth pissing on the people that don't have broadband to just go 100% that route. It's maybe 10 years down the road. It may be forever before they reach whatever, 80% of the potential customers have broadband versus not.
Yeah.
You know, so they know where that number is, where it's worth it for them to do it. Clearly it's a ways away. And I was talking with my buddy last night that we were at dinner with, this really savvy IT guy. And I said, clearly we're getting away from physical distribution. And he said, yes, but here's the thing. I can, after I've played a game, I can give it to a friend. I can give it as a gift. I can't do that with downloadable stuff. Now, you can give points as a gift.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop anyway. I mean, you can do that, but you definitely are not thinking about that when you buy a game.
No, you're exactly right. Although the point about borrowing is, that's a valid point. I've got, I think, two games from you. Well, at least one game I've borrowed from you.
Yeah. And, I'm just saying that is going to just disappear as a thought. Which, I mean, I was just considering
content producers have to love from the fact that you can't, from a DRM perspective.
I know. I was sitting there, and until I got this external hard drive, which I probably just broke, I had no. I wasn't even saving a bunch of the stuff I bought from iTunes, just because I kind of had seen them, and now I'm sort of archiving a bunch of them.
Does iTunes let you read down? Oh, nope, they don't. You say that your computer crashed, and they give you that line about, well, we're not supposed to do it, but okay, here, do it.
Yeah, now of course, Xbox you can theoretically redo, but...
Well, it's not theoretically, it's that they know there's not enough space on even the big new Elite Drive to hold a whole bunch of HD movies, so they have just flat out said, delete it when you're done with it, we keep track on our servers, and whenever you want to watch it again, just download it again. Yep. Which I think is exactly right.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if they have progressive download.
They do.
Okay, so that's good.
Because you can start usually within a few minutes.
So we need to wrap up so you can go to your board meeting.
Yep.
There was an email, but we could talk about it next time.
Cool.
We talked about it last week and didn't talk about it this week.
Yeah.
So, we need to, there's two episodes that have not yet been put up.
No,
so this will be number three.
One was put up today. So,
oh, okay.
But I got to get the other one. I got to find the original. I've got all the audio tracks, but I got to find the recording track. Otherwise, I'll have to rebuild it.
So you guys rock at mustardaonaise.com is how you contact us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get back in gear real soon now. We're in gear.
It's just
the results are not palpable.
No.
So thanks for listening. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And that's it.